Welcome to Amplify Together NC, a podcast by Disability Rights North Carolina. I'm your host, Jen Andrew, Communications Coordinator here at DRNC. Each episode will bring you conversations with disability advocates, experts, and everyday people making a difference. Together, we'll dive deep into disability rights, current issues, and the power of community, one conversation at a time. Let's get started. If you could just tell our audience your name, job title, and how long you've been with DRNC.
Hi, everyone. My name is Gabby. It's actually Gabriella, but everyone calls me Gabby Bush. And I have been with the organization since 2010. I started, and today I am the supervising investigator for our representative PAE team.
Thank you. Could you tell us a little bit about your work, what kinds of cases you handle, and how you advance the rights of people with disabilities?
Sure. So the work of my team is very unique from the rest of the PNA. Back in 2018, there was a new federal law that was signed called the Strengthening Protections for Beneficiaries, Social Security Beneficiaries Act. And so what that did was it gave all of the PNAs across the country access to partner with Social Security and look at any cases where they believe that there was financial fraud. If you are familiar with Henry's Turkey Farm, it was a provider you can easily Google. There's a good New York Times expose called The Boys in the Bunkhouse. We like to think of that as sort of the catalyst for a program on my team. So we're there to look for any potential conflicts of interest. AE is so an employer, making sure that they are paying a living wage. And that, you know, in the Henry's Turkey farm case, they were also a housing provider. And of course, that housing was way substandard. I mean, just awful. All inhumane living conditions. And so that's another huge part of our reviews. We look at financial records for payees that serve beneficiaries for up to a year. We tour housing if they provide housing. And then we also look at employment agreements as well. So that is it in a really bird's eye view, but the team really does, it's pretty expansive, the amount of the financial exploitation we could be dealing with.
Wow. That's really interesting. And I feel like probably not a lot of people are aware of that and also how important it is. Could you, if there is such a thing, could you describe like a typical day in your work?
Yeah. So I'm the team supervisor, and otherwise we're a team of six full-time investigators, and they're spread out across the state, across North Carolina. I always like to think of my old supervisor used to say, we scatter like marbles, and I always have that imagery. In the morning, first thing, I hop on my desk and I look to see where the marbles have scattered. I check my email, and, you know, our team has procedures where we all email each other so everyone knows where they are in the field that day. We check in and kind of check out since everyone is remote, and it's amazing to see where people are conducting investigations and reviews in Asheville, in Whiteville, North Carolina, at the beach, in Raleigh, in tiny towns. And so I serve as sort of home base. Folks call me throughout the day with various troubleshooting issues. I do more of the boring stuff. It's a lot of the reporting and the supervision and that type stuff. The folks that are in the field are doing the heart and soul of the work. And truly, every day really is different. The staff cases, you know, when I say I'm sitting at home base, folks will call me. And even though I've been doing this for almost 15 years now, since 2018 with this specific program, sometimes you have to sit back and say, like, wow, okay, we haven't heard that one before. Let's staff and figure out how we can help this Social Security recipient, you know, something really bad has happened, or it's a really unique referral. You know, so every day really is different.
Oh yeah. That's interesting. It does. It sounds very dynamic, and like you get information that helps you pivot to the needs of our constituents. Thank you. I understand you were DRNC's first outreach specialist. Can you tell us a little bit what that experience was like?
Yeah. So when I started in 2010, I was thinking about this earlier. It's just, we've come so far so quickly in terms of technology. I was fresh out of college, and I believe I was the only person in the organization that had a Facebook account. Because handle, you know, I had an at uncg.edu, so it allowed me to have a Facebook account. It wasn't open to everyone yet, at least I don't know if it was at that time. And so having the person with the most social media experience, we said, you know, let's create a social media plan. And we created our first Facebook page and, you know, started trying to engage with people that way. But that was, you know, new territory. Really, my role for the agency was to be a sort of walking, talking billboard, right? At one point, my supervisor restricted me to traveling only 700 miles per week. I was traveling more than that. And
I was going to say, that feels like a lot.
It's a lot. She said it's not sustainable, but I found, you know, I had that young out of college, I want to change the world energy. And I drove to corners of the state. I went to all 100 counties and met with some really amazing people that ended up serving our board. I met, you know, Samantha R's parents at a self-advocacy training, and Samantha. You know, I met lots of folks that have since engaged with DRNC in various ways. They've come to our conference year after year, you know, whatever it is, but, you know, really doing that grassroots work with people and learning what the issues were across the state, I think really helped inform our early days and mine too. It really helped shape my understanding of disability rights issues in North Carolina.
That's fascinating. There's so many points in there that I feel like I could talk to you forever about, including I really miss that energy, that just out of college can do all the things energy. Yeah, that was fun. And also to think about all of the changes with communications as a comms person. It's pretty interesting. I know that self-advocacy is such an important theme in your work. What advice would you give to someone just starting their journey?
I think for me, I went to college knowing I wanted to do nonprofit work, but I would not have thought of myself as an advocate. And, you know, over the years, I think I have learned just to try and find your voice, even if it's small, even if it shakes. I am very much the person that gets nervous. I have a lot of social anxiety. And my own disabilities. And so, yeah, sometimes I can get really nervous. And I have learned over the years that people want to hear what you have to say. And you will, you know, you can find allies in the room as well, right? So if you're an advocate and you're just starting out and you don't know what to do, I would say find a friend. Find someone who's going to be an ally who can help you in your advocacy, and then practice with that friend using your voice in whatever the situation might be, you know, school or, you know, calling your insurance provider and getting your medical treatment paid for. These are all advocacy skills, and we have to sharpen them and use them even if it's difficult, even if your voice shakes.
I love that. And it seems like a commonality that I interview lots of folks who tell me that they have social anxiety or feel nervous. And I always think the same thing, you hide it well. And I think that's really important because sometimes I know also as someone with social anxiety, I feel like it's just me, right? I feel like I'm the only nervous person, but that's a really good point that a lot of people feel anxious before they step into this work and use their voice. So thank you for naming that. In 2015, you shifted to the Investigations and Monitoring Unit. What inspired that move and how did your role change?
Yeah, so I sort of like, it's a perfect segue, actually. I thought I was going to do development and outreach and communications and all of that stuff. Good stuff, good part of the nonprofit. And then at the time, my supervisor said, you know, we had a need. There was an investigation that had popped up at an adult care facility. And I was just out and about on the road, traveling all of these different places, 700 miles a week. Yeah. And they, while you're out here, do you mind popping into this facility? And I said, sure, absolutely. And then I realized over time, now that was prior to 2015, actually, that was probably closer to 2012, 2013. 2015, I had the actual title change, but that really truly was where my passion was and still is. My, everyone has a PNA initiation story. Yeah. But my, not initiation, that's the wrong word. What's the word I'm looking for? Your origin story.
Yes. Yeah.
Your origin story. My Nana, suffered abuse in a facility, which ultimately led to her passing.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Jen. But I'm a spiritual person, and you know, life takes you one place. You think I'm going to do development, I'm going to do good in this one way. And then I saw this role. I saw this way to help folks that just reminded me so much of my grandmother and folks that were not physically able to use their voice for whatever reason. And I could do that. And I've been doing that basically every day since 2015 at DRNC. That is the core of what we do, is we help people find their voice through advocacy or through legal services.
Yeah, thank you so much. So in visiting facilities across North Carolina, what are some of the most impactful things you've witnessed during those investigations? It's a big question.
That's a question. And, you know, for a time I looked at DRNC death reports. That's probably not something that many people realize that this organization even does. But I think it's a critical part of the work. You know, if someone passes while in certain types of facilities, it is mandatory that we receive all of those reports and we review each and every one to make sure that the individual died of natural causes and not due to any type of abuse, neglect, you know, medication mismanagement, staffing issues. And that's really heavy, really difficult work. But through that work, I know we've opened investigations and made sure that, you know, there was some dignity for family and things after the fact. But yeah, I mean, I've done investigations at state-operated facilities, small group homes, where we've seen deaths and broken bones of people with disabilities. I mean, really tough work. What's amazing to me about the representative payee team and then this newer work that we've been doing is the PNA has access to look at things that we have not historically. So we're really drilling down on financial exploitation and learning a lot about just different commonalities, you know, between folks who are without housing or folks who potentially are being trafficked, you know, benefits trafficking that's going on, you know, all just types of pretty insidious financial mismanagement. So I would say that's some of the most impactful. Not every day is that elevated, you know. At records, and we're helping a payee change their bank account title. And that's great work too, right? That's helping long-term financial abuse. But I will say that the most impactful stuff is maybe some of the stuff that we don't always talk about because it's the really tough side of the work.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. You've talked a lot about why your work is really important. Is there any sort of common thread to the challenges that you see?
Is there a common thread?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I don't know how long we have about that. I think one of the earliest parts of the work for me was understanding why maybe we didn't take on as much individual advocacy. And I think over time it is recognizing that there's a lot of gaps in the systems. I think that's the common thread, is when I see someone or meet someone, you know, there's been a system failure along the way, a medical failure, where, you know, or an educational failure, a payee failure, a guardianship failure, the legal system. I mean, whatever it might be, there's folks just fall through. And when you fall through so many gaps in so many systems, it becomes exhausting. And even the strongest advocate gets tired.
Yeah. Understandable. Understandable. Yeah. On that note, outside of work, you're quite active in your community. How do those parts of your life support or to balance the intensity of the work that you do?
Yeah, that's, you're so good at this. That's such a good segue. You have to find things all the time. But for me, truly, it is focusing on the micro, right? Like the macro, when you think about the big, big systems of everything, it really is scary. And it feels like I cannot change that. Mm-hmm. Just on what can I do to help my energy levels so that I can bring a light to the community? What can I do for my kids? What can I do for my family? What can I do for my community? You know, various nonprofits and other social groups I support around me. And sometimes it's walking my dog. I think animals are really important.
If people
I think people need to pet their dogs and their cats and just take some deep breaths.
Yes, absolutely. I know that mine keep me centered and laughing a lot. Yeah. This is also a tough question, but can you speak to what would be at risk for people with disabilities if our organization, if DRNC, were no longer here?
There is a lot, and I could, we could have had a whole podcast just about this.
We could.
Thinking about points that we talked about today, we get calls all the time, or, you know, folks through our online intakes, saying, you know, my payee is mismanaging my money. We have folks that are without housing sometimes. We've had that situation more than once where folks did not realize that they were even receiving a Social Security benefit and they were for help. And then we've come to find out that they did have a representative payee and, you know, things went from there. So more gaps are being created and mm-hmm. there's less funding and just programs are going away. The PNA is absolutely critical. We are the one constant for people with disabilities. We have always been, even since the start in 2010, we had this institutional knowledge and this ability to be the central connecting point for people with disabilities living in North Carolina. And I just can't imagine that we would not be a hub for that anymore, or just would have to even reduce our ability because the need is growing. The need is not shrinking. So we need more staff, not less. It's just unimaginable that we wouldn't be here.
Absolutely. I can say too, as a comms person who does our social media, that I see that reflected online as well. You know, when folks have needs, sometimes they reach out to me, you know, and there is a lot of need out there. We just finished our 2026 target survey. We had more than 700 responses and almost like 450 people took a significant chunk out of their day to tell us what was going on. And I'm so grateful they did. I wish too that we had more staff and all of the resources to really get folks the help they needed because it's significant. If you could share one message with the broader public about disability rights and advocacy in North Carolina, what would it be? And, or, you know, what do you want folks listening to walk away remembering?
Well, I guess I want people to know that there's a lot of, there's a lot going on right now. There's a lot of noise out there in the world and we are here. So I am still here. I hope that people know, you know, they can take away from this that our lines are open and we want to hear about, you know, what people are experiencing, that fraud, that waste, that abuse that is happening throughout the community, people who are entitled to benefits, who are receiving benefits and then are being exploited by someone, you know, that's a core piece of our work. That's a core piece of my daily work here. And I want you to know that we are here for you. We know that you're there. And I hope you can find your voice, find the ability to make that call or check out our website and find some resources, or, you know, give us a call and see if there's something that we can do to help.
Thank you so much, Gabby. I know I speak for everyone in our organization. We're so grateful for you and the amazing work that you and your team do. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of Amplify Together NC. Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Let's keep the discussion going. Until next time, stay strong, stay connected, and keep advocating.